Good day, listeners. Welcome to another edition of the Voices of Legacy. Today, we have a special guest joining us. This is your friend, Pastor Carl, someone who has roots in Toledo, but was raised in Detroit, Michigan. He's a proud business owner making a significant impact on our community. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Keenan Wells, the owner of a popular restaurant, Joyful Coney Island, here in Toledo, Ohio. Mr. Wells, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Mister. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm blessed with the joy of living.
Amen.
We have a interesting interview today because I think there's a storied past to be shared. And I spoke to you previously, and I know you said that your wife says that you need to write multiple books. Maybe this is the beginning of that, along with your article in the Toledo Blade as well. Your background, your experience, the deep connection that you have to both Toledo and Detroit, bringing a little bit of Detroit culture to Toledo, which is really cool because we used to have back when I was, I'm about your age, you used to have to go up to Detroit to get real Coney Islands.
Right.
But we're thankful for having you here at the Voices of Legacy today. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
First, thanks for having me.
Oh,
my name is Keenan Wells. I am the owner of Joyful Coney Island. I'm born in Toledo. I'm raised in Detroit. Cooking became cooking because of my incarceration. I went to prison for a conspiracy, a drug conspiracy. I was the only person on my case, not a police officer.
Wow.
I did 20 years in the penitentiary. During that time, I found God, who had always had me, but I didn't know he had me. One day, I'm walking down the hallway, and I'm going to stab a guy. And I've been involved in multiple stabbings before. This particular day, I had a voice say to me, "You've tried this your way for 40 years. I was 39 years old. And my mother had always told me a fool 40 is a fool forever.
Wow.
So when I hear this voice, it says, come to church and listen to me. It was amazing. It was like God was standing on my shoulder. I waited a couple days, and I went to church. When I went to church, a friend of mine from Saginaw, I haven't seen him in multiple years, named Big Zeke, was up on the stage, and he was talking. And when I came in, guess what? He was talking about me.
Wow.
And the devil right away said to me, look at him down here gospeling about you. But he was saying all positive things. And God said to me, only me and you knew you was coming today. You didn't tell nobody you was coming. Sit down and listen. And what he was telling guys is that if you need a workout partner, if you hungry, if you need something, we got a homeboy here, go ask him. He'll give it to you. He ain't coming outside to do no gospeling. But if you need something, go to him. And it was amazing. And from that day on, I just been listening to God and I've been trusting God.
Wow. And this was in prison.
This was in prison. This was while in prison. So little things start bothering me to become a man. I learned that it was a difference from a male and a man. I could be sitting down and I could drop a piece of paper on the floor and my conscience would say, that's not what a man does. That's what a male does. Things started bothering me. I started having conscience problems about not doing right all the time. So I just started practicing doing right all the time.
Wow.
And when I started practicing doing right all the time, things just fell in line for me. It was so easy. All of a sudden, my counselors loved me. All of a sudden, the police officers loved me. All of a sudden, white Aryan brotherhoods would sit down and discuss things with me. It wasn't about hate. It was just about their beliefs. And I didn't judge people because I had been judged so harshly myself. So I sat down and I listened. And it would be times that guys would be sitting in my room talking to me, and other guys kept coming and looking in the window like, man, when he coming out? I need to talk to you. I need to talk to you. So I went from becoming a youngster to an OG in prison doing my 20-year incarceration.
How old were you when you went in?
I was 29 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was 29 years old. I went in with an attitude. I went in feeling the world owed me something. And probably for those first 10 years, I had planned on coming home being a menace to society. Mm. I felt like, oh, I'm going to get back, you know. Mm. You think 50 keys is something, wait till I come home, I'm going to get 200 keys.
Wow.
You know, so once I found God, my whole attitude slowly but surely changed. Mm. I stopped wanting to be involved in any nonsense. Anything that wasn't positive, I just didn't want to be part of it. Mm. So I had what they call in prison is keys to the car. So that means if you from Detroit, mm-hmm. and you're at USP Big Sandy, I was there, USP Victorville. Those mm-hmm. are some of the toughest places to be in the world. USP Atwater, which is a gang facility.
Mm-hmm. And these are all prisons.
Those are all prisons, mm-hmm. federal prisons. And I had the keys to the car no matter where I go, which mean that if one of my homeboys got into a trouble or any issue, DC Carr would come and talk to me about it. The GDs would come and talk to me about it. Mm-hmm. The vice lords would come and talk to me about it.
And these are groups in the prison?
Groups inside of the mm-hmm. prison, because I had a calm and level mind. We didn't always have to go to violence or resort to violence. Let's just do right. People make it right and wrong, but when it's my homeboy, it's an in-between. It shouldn't be that.
Yeah.
It should be either right or wrong. If you can't tell your friend he's wrong, then he's not your friend. Wow. You also should be able to tell him he's right when he's right. Those things helped me develop character in prison. So while in prison, I had a captain named Captain Gordon one day ask me, come to the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I need you to go to the kitchen. And I said, Captain Gordon, I don't do no kitchen work. If I had worked, I wouldn't be in prison.
Yeah.
So he said, come to the kitchen. I need you down there.
So you weren't a cook beforehand?
Nope. Wow. I wasn't a cook beforehand. So I go down there. I go to the kitchen. And I start working in the kitchen. And I found love in cooking. And guess what? Before long, I was cooking for the whole compound. And it wasn't long after that I was working in what's called the officer's mess, which is cooking for the police officers. And doing those things, I could cook what I wanted to eat. I was allowed to make my own food. So that became my hustle in jail, fixing food and serving food. Mm. I came up with my own recipes over time. When I got out, I decided that I wanted to open a restaurant. Mm. And it's a small story behind that also. I went to a restaurant that was supposed to be a Coney Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't happy with what they told me was a Coney Island.
Because like, you knew what a Coney Island was supposed to be.
I was like, this is not a Coney Island.
Yeah.
And I said, I turned to Joy and I said, you know what? I'm going to open up a Coney Island.
For our listeners,
yes, sir.
This is a really good point, and it's an aside. What is the difference? I know it, but I want you to explain. Between a chili dog and a Coney Island hot dog.
Well, one thing I do different than Detroit, I do all beef hot dogs. Okay. I don't do the pork chicken mm-hmm. hot dog. That's usually a Coney Island hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
And a Coney Island hot dog is grilled, and it's mm-hmm. chili, onions, and mustard.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of people call and say, what is on your Coney dog? You know, a Coney dog is all over the world is chili, onions, and mustard.
I think I'm hungry already. Growing up in Toledo and Detroit, which... they're similar, but they're not exactly alike. Could you share your upbringing in Toledo and Detroit and what shaped your approach to running your business along with your incarceration? Because it sounds like you really started your business before you ever got out.
I did. Well, I'm born here.
Mm-hmm.
When I was very young, maybe three, my mother and father moved to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And in Detroit, I played high school football, Little League, PAL football.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Henry Ford High School.
Oh, okay.
I was a pretty good student. My mother worked at Chrysler, my father at General Motors.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only bad apple. I have two other brothers, siblings, in that same household. When I was in the 12th grade, I was coming home from football practice, and I passed a place called Dexter Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in Dexter Chevrolet, and they had this green Blazer on the floor. Mm-hmm. S10 at that time. And I came home and I told my mother and father, I said, man, I want this truck. It's a Dexter Chevrolet. And my dad laughed at me like, do we know what money is? You know, do we know what money is? And I'm like, yeah, I know what money is. I want this truck. So because I was doing decent in school, I was pretty much a decent football player. I made all city. I wasn't all American. My dad encouraged my mom to take me to Dexter Chevrolet to look at the truck. So when I get to Dexter Chevrolet, I don't know nothing about financing. I don't know nothing except for how much it costs I want to buy it. So the man is telling my mama the truck is be $17,138. And my mom looks at me and I said, I want it. And my mom's like, babe, that's a lot of money. I lift up my shirt, I had $20,000. My mother didn't know I had that kind of money. She knew I was doing some hustling, but she didn't know I had that kind of money. So my mother was more street than my father. My mother told me, give me $1,000. And she gave the man $1,000 to hold his truck. And on the way home, she must smoke 10 cigarettes. But she didn't talk to me one bit, you know?
Like, and, where in the world did you?
I get home, and my mother and father's room was upstairs, and I could hear them talking. And then my dad was military, very strict, good dude, became my best friend when I became a man. And he called me up there, and he was like, man, I didn't know you had that kind of money in the house, you know? And I said, yeah, well, you know, y'all took me to Kmart, bought me a safe, you know? And he said, yeah, but I thought that was because you was watching TV, you know? And he asked me how much money I had. I told him, he said, in the safe too? And I said, yeah, in the safe too. He was like, you can't live here. That was the first thing he said to me. And it was like, wow, it was crushing. But I understood that he had two other sons to raise. And he didn't. I was a bad influence. And he didn't know I was a bad influence because I was raised, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am. All my mom friends wanted me to be their son.
So you being bad in the streets, but respectful at home.
Definitely. I mean, that was the way it was then. You know, you respected the people in the street, too. It wasn't being bad. I just sold drugs, which I didn't know was a bad thing, you know. And it was amazing, but I moved to a place called West Bloomfield while in high school. In the 12th grade, my mother went and got the condo in her name. And my mother was my maid. I gave her a job. She came and cleaned up my apartment. She came and fixed my food every day. I still went to school every day, went to football practice every day. I just had multiple cars, and all my friends were drug dealers, older guys who had been taking care of me since Little League. You know, it starts in Little League. You're the guy who's scoring touchdowns, and the drug dealer's over there, and he adopts you. You know, and before you know it, he gives you $200-$300, and I get to high school. I got a play uncle whose Mercedes is available to me whenever I want it, and his Cadillac is available just because I was a decent athlete. But you got a taste of the life. You know,
and even with a good family that sucked you in?
Even with a great family, it sucked me in because those guys became my family. Those were the guys I spent more time with than my family. I didn't sit at the house. I was at football games, basketball games, you know? And during that time, the drug dealer didn't have the rapport he has now. He wasn't such a vicious person. He looked out for the neighborhood. You know, if you needed a few dollars, you went to your neighborhood drug dealer and got it. You paid it back. Miss Thomas gas bill due. She came and got it from you. She bought it back when she had it. You had enough to share, so you shared. It was a community that raised you then. And even though my community knew I sold drugs, they knew me as Mrs. Wells' son still.
But you got caught.
I got caught. Yeah, probably best thing ever happened to me, or I wouldn't be sitting here today.
Your life, yeah.
Definitely saved my life. Definitely saved my life without question. One day, we'll get to how I got caught, but on my way to getting caught, I had a ball. I had a great time. I made a lot of great friends. And some of those friends are still friends today. A lot of them are dead. Maybe I got a couple still in prison doing life. And I stay in touch with them, maybe not as much as I should, but I don't miss the life at all. You know, it's a whole different life when you find God. I used to didn't understand. I was about 17 years old, and I seen Mr. Brady, who wasn't a pastor, but he was a regular church guy. I seen him get robbed at gunpoint. And I seen him look down the gun with no fear at all, no fear on his mind, nothing. And I could never understand that, because all my life, I've been taught to fear the pistol.
Yeah.
You fear that gun in your face. But when I found God for real, I understood what Mr. Brady was. He was comfortable. He didn't have no fear. He had made his peace with God. He was doing no wrong.
Yeah.
He knew where he was going without question.
And you wanted that.
Later on, once I seen it, you know, later on, once I reflected on it. And at that time, no, I didn't want that. You know, at that time, I thought he was crazy. Like, man, this man must have been crazy. Yeah. Y'all should have seen him. You know, he didn't care. See, my mother was a woman who, she carried her Bible everywhere she went, but she also carried a pistol. And, you know, that's how I was raised. But cooking became an art in the penitentiary, because we made things from nothing. I remember frying food in a garbage can, a Rubbermaid garbage can. I remember taking the back of an iron, taking it apart, putting the plug back on the iron, putting it in the grease, plugging it up, and that heated the grease to the temperature we needed to fry raw food.
Wow.
And that's how we cooked. And it got to the point where when you ain't a bad person, you cooking and your counselor say, you got 2 hours to cook today. You know, make sure I get one on my desk.
Yeah.
And it became an open door for all races. Mexicans come talk to me. Blacks come talk. Whites come talk. Food was an international language by itself, because everybody will come and talk to you.
So that experience changed you?
That experience changed me a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that experience changed me a lot. And it made me be able to communicate first. I started reading a lot of books, and I started learning to first seek to understand. Take yourself out your shoes and put yourself in theirs. See what their point is. They might have a valid point. And then I learned to step back in my shoes and make my own point. A lot of times people don't want to listen to the other person.
Yes.
They just want you to listen. You know, nobody wants to be talked down.
No.
You get people come to your door with attitudes.
Yeah.
Right off the back, you know, it's terrible, the energy. But you also meet a lot of positive people. I can't remember his name offhand, but I had a guy who wrote a book because of the experience me and him had at my restaurant. He was on his way to commit suicide.
Wow.
And I told him, man, God got something for you. Take your time. This ain't you. He brought his mother to meet me, signed the book in front of me and everything. It was a good experience. So I just think that sometimes we have to be not so fast to judge, because we all don't want to be judged harshly.
Yes.
But how can you want what you're doing to someone else?
Yeah.
Give a person a benefit of a doubt.
Yeah.
It don't hurt. I got this thing where I give a lot of food away, and people may be thinking I got over on him. But they didn't get over on me. I got a deal with God. You know, guys tell me all the time, man, I'm going to get you back. I'll be like, you can't get me back. God going to get me. I need that real one from God.
Yeah.
I got a guy named Mr. Larry. I've been knowing Mr. Larry maybe 6 months now. Mr. Larry has come to my window and gave me a $20 bill over 25 times. And Mr. Larry said, man, feed somebody today for me. The other day, Mr. Larry came and ordered some food. And he reaching in his, he's always walking, and he reaching in his pocket to pay for the food. And I hand him the bag and say, hold on, Mr. Larry, I closed the door. Get out of here, Mr. Larry, you can't pay. He like, no, I got to pay.
Yeah.
I said, Mr. Larry, you blocking my blessings.
Mm-hmm.
You always want to bless somebody, but you won't let me get my blessings. Yeah. And he laughed and he walked away.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. So opening the Joyful Coney Island, what inspired you to open Joyful Coney Island in Toledo? And what is your vision for the restaurant moving forward?
Well, let me tell you how I got to Toledo. When I got ready to parole, my homeboys was going to put a billboard up in Detroit saying, welcome home, with my nickname on it.
Okay.
I wasn't that person. I didn't want to be that person again.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that if you hang around crooks, you're going to be a crook.
Yes.
I didn't want that. I didn't want that. So I called my sister, who was in the real estate, and I told my sister, sis, I ain't trying to parole to Detroit. She couldn't believe it, but she was happy for me. She had a place in Port Clinton on the water. And she said, bro, you can have it. She said, just hearing you say that, you can have it. And I was like, for real? She said, yeah. So I go to my case manager, my counselor. I change my address to Port Clinton. And I get paroled to the VOA. Probably best place ever. I mean, I hear a lot of people talk down on it, but you had guys like Mr. Holmes. And I could mention a bunch of people, but they had seen all the slick stuff. But nothing you couldn't put over on them. And I respected it a lot. You know, because they gave you a benefit of the doubt. They wasn't there to judge you. It was Volunteers of America. It was amazing. They didn't judge me at all. They gave me all the tools I needed to get started. I had a lot of blessings when I came home. Including the building that I'm at right now. One of my friends who I was in the penitentiary with, they're from Toledo, owned those buildings. And I told him I want to open up a restaurant. He gave me the keys and said, go look at it. And I went and looked at it. It needed a lot of work. And I said, I can do it. And he said, take it for a year. Then we'll talk about the money. So he gave it to me for a year. During that year, we got it together, built it. It was kind of slow at first. But it wasn't slower than 12 cents an hour in the penitentiary. You know? So
cooking on an iron.
Cooking on an iron, cooking on your cooking on the desk, you know. So making a grilled cheese. So before you know it, I got the business up, we got it running. Then maybe 2 years in, a food critic came. Didn't know he was a food critic, didn't have no clue. This was after the Blade. Miss Mary, she was beautiful. Miss Mary, man. She told me, she said, you're gonna make it. I know it. She said, she told me, she said, you're gonna make it. Couple years later, I'm not on no social media. I sell food like I sold dope, word of mouth. You know, I think if you put a good product out there, people will talk about it. That's also true. Say we're not selling food, we're selling our reputation. You know, so before long, we're cooking. I put a window in so we could stay open late at night. Some guys come one night, five or six of them. Long dreads. I'm like, oh, I hope they ain't going to be a problem. They come, they order all kind of food. Then they take the food to the parking lot and put it on top of their cars and start opening it up. And I'm like, what is they doing? And all of a sudden, these lights come out.
Oh, man.
They light the food up. And it's a guy called the Hungry Black Man.
I saw that.
And I'm like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen from this. But he gave us a 4.8 out of 5. And his social media, I guess, is a million people. And all of a sudden, Joyful took off. I mean, the next day, the line was down the street, wrapped around the corner, but it came from good service, good food. Me not, I had no clue who he was. Never heard of him before. And since then, our business has took off. It's thriving. We're still trying to stay in that medium area because I watch a lot of food places get too big and the food gets too thin.
That's right.
You know, and my daughter would always say, Dad, we need more advertising, more advertising. I always say, we can't handle more business and keep the food this good.
Yeah,
I don't want to get to the place where mashed potatoes used to be the fire and now mashed potatoes are water.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen those places. And it's not the place's fault. It's just that they got more business than they can stand. So a lot of times I may tell people, hey, we're a little busy. If you can call back in 30 minutes, I'll get your order took care of. But right now, I got five people I'm taking care of.
Yeah.
And when you come to my restaurant, I don't believe in big you, little me. I try to treat everybody the same.
That's awesome.
You know, and our business has took off, and my next step in our business is here in Toledo going 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
We open 3 a.m. Monday through Friday. We catch so much of the plant business. Nobody's open at night. So they've supported us tremendously.
So it seems like you may be big in community engagement, both in Toledo and Detroit, or just Toledo? How do you stay connected?
Right now, basically Toledo. I don't travel to Detroit as much as I used to.
Okay.
I have a lot of old memories and old friends in Detroit, and some of them, insanity is doing the same thing, looking for different results.
Yeah.
You know, and guilty by association is real.
Yeah.
You know, with my record, my jacket, my history, If I'm in Detroit with a drug dealer, I'm selling drugs.
What do they say in the movie? I keep trying to get out, but they keep pulling me back in.
But you got to get out. When you out, you out.
Yeah.
You can't straddle the fence. Just like with God, you can't straddle the fence.
Yeah.
You know, either you're on this side or you're on that side.
Yeah.
Don't play the middle. Because playing the middle going to catch up with you.
Well, that same person you're talking about, that God says that kind of makes him sick. He'd rather you be hot or cold, in or out.
Yeah.
It's not healthy. It's not healthy. You have to make a choice and kind of stick with it. And it sounds like you made your choice and you stuck with it. And so far, sounds like success to me.
Man, God is so good. You have to be patient. It's hard to believe in something you can't see.
Yeah.
Something you can't touch. But when you get that faith,
mm-hmm.
And when you start seeing the blessings, you can feel God running through your veins.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to see it. You don't have to touch it.
Yeah.
It's a feeling like, I got this saying, I work out and I do burpees. And then when you're doing burpees, it's a high intensity of cardio. Everybody mm-hmm. in prison do burpees. Mm-hmm. But when your heart is feeling like it's going to jump out your chest and you get through, I tell people I never feel more closer to God than right then. And it's the endorphins that's released in your body to feel good.
Yeah.
I think that's what God is all the time, to feel good. No matter what happens, bad or good, I accept it and I thank the Lord for it. Because I may not can't see it,
mm-hmm.
but I know he sees thousands of years ahead of me. And everything happens for a reason. So I take the good with the bad and let it roll off.
Yeah.
The milk spill, we're going to clean it up, pour some more.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good attitude to have. Good attitude to have. Well, so your life lessons have sent you to a place of peace, it sounds like, and prosperity?
Prosperity is coming.
Okay.
Prosperity definitely is coming.
All right.
You know, I didn't know you wasn't going to get rich in the food business. I really thought I was going to get rich.
Mm-hmm.
I'm comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord is my rich, my wealth.
Yes. So owning and running your restaurant and being incarcerated and released, I know there's some demands, and I know we're coming to a close. It almost sounds like we need to have a part two for you. What are some of the most important lessons that you've learned as a business owner and someone that's actually formerly incarcerated, coming out and transitioning into a life where you have freedom, but you are making good decisions?
I trust God a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I trust God more than I trust anybody in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think I don't have a supporting cast,
because
mm-hmm. all my life I've been a leader. So it's like I'm everybody else's supporting cast.
Mm-hmm.
So I just lean on God. I trust God, but I do right. I do my best not to do wrong. Mm-hmm. I try my best to always do right. When you want to come out and do something, stick with it.
Yeah.
I got a lot of friends that come out the gate like a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
But when they get to the midway point, they give it up
and
say, I'm going to start something else. They're great starters, but you got to be a great finisher.
Mm-hmm.
Put your mind to it and put your heart into it. And ask people. The people that work for me, I ask them to give me what I give them. If the toilet needs cleaning, I go in there and clean it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that guy sees, man, he cleaning it. He the owner.
Leading by example.
Lead by example. Mm-hmm. Talk is cheap. Nobody wants to hear you talk it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not walking it. People want to see. People see what they believe.
Yes.
That's just what it is. You know, they say, what is it? Believe little of what you hear.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit less of what you see. I don't know how to explain it. I think I'm just blessed, but I put my mind to something and I go at it. And I think it's like, I tell people this, same principle, different product.
Mm-hmm.
I'm selling hot dogs now. I'm selling soul food now.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it just like I did it when I sold drugs.
And you don't have to worry about any prison time.
Oh, I don't look over my shoulder.
Yeah.
The officers come eat. I feel great.
Yeah.
Day before yesterday, I seen the raid van with the tank, mm-hmm. and they pulled right up inside by the side of the Coney Island. I'm talking to Brother Michael King,
mm-hmm.
and we sitting there, and he wants me to come to their church to do on a Thursday Bible mm-hmm. study, and we sitting there having a conversation, and we didn't flinch. And I say, man, you remember the time we took off? You know, that felt great, because I'm not on that side at all.
That's got to be a good feeling.
No medium.
Yeah.
It's a great feeling.
Last but not least, what do you think people will remember you for? What is your legacy now, and what would you like for it to be?
I think my legacy now in the community is that you're never going to be hungry as long as I'm there.
All right.
I'm not turning nobody down for a plate. No matter how slick they are or what, come get you a plate. You got that. I may actually pick up the stuff in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
I might give you a broom and tell you, come in and sweep the front room. But I won't turn you away. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give you my money to buy dope. But I'm going to be real with you. I don't care what people remember me as. As long as they remember I did right. I'm not up. I don't tolerate no BS. I don't want to hear the I grew up. I heard everything.
Yeah.
Just like even in prison, you come to the compound and you like tell such a come on out. I tell him, hey, tell him if you want to talk to me, tell him come on, work out in the morning. We can talk. I don't want to hear the stories. I've heard them all.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you coming out for the Voices of Legacy.
I appreciate you having me.
And sharing your story.
Thanks.
And part of it, because that's not all of it. Not by far. I think a book is in the works, no doubt. I'm in agreement with your wife. But thank you so much, Brother Keenan
Thank you,
Wells.
Brother Carl, for having me, Pastor Carl. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Voices of Legacy. This is your friend, Pastor Carl Mitchell, the third, your host of this program. We want you to go to wgte.org/legacy to like, share, subscribe, and hear all of our past podcasts and our future podcasts. Be a friend and join with us in the Voices of Legacy, where you're writing your own legacy every day that you live. Have a blessed day.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.